is out there. And hopefully wherever the truth is, it has an oven to keep my dinner warm. Tonight is an all new I Wanna Believe right here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host for the evening. With me, of course, we have the haunted boy himself, Tanner Calvert.
I'm just here so I don't get fined. Who's going to find me? Who's getting paid?
Well, you're getting paid for this. Also with us tonight, Double H.
Will Smith did nothing wrong.
Damn it. I was going to.
This seems like the show to talk about that.
The top story I was going to lead off with is shocking live video from the Oscars shows you the moment that a man's soul was knocked out of his body.
And with his dying breath, he collapsed in such a way as to show us. Did you get that Simpsons shit post that I sent you?
I think so. Was it to me directly?
It's Burns falling onto the sundial. Sundial, the compass.
Yeah.
But it's the WS. And it's just Chris Rock's head. He showed us who the killer was.
Oh. Also with us tonight, Lindsay Wolf Gong. Except she's just standing there menacingly.
Yeah, because your dinner's just about done.
My dinner's just about done. Started. Just getting started. And the dinner's almost done. Well, that's because Tanner had to go put his kid down. Whatever that means.
Wow.
We might see Tanner on the news tomorrow. Anyway.
We might see his kid on this show.
That's wrong.
I knew it was going to happen, too, as soon as I started to swallow the tea. The hot tea. Well,
Tanner, what I meant was she might come running into the room. That
right.
happens all the time.
That literally,
no, it doesn't.
That happens. I should have put her in the thank you notes I did for the anniversary for Podzilla because she's on the show more than some of the people that are on the cast. Anywho,
7 years.
We'll have
7 years as of Sunday.
Yeah. So, as a quick side note, we will be doing because here's the lineup for this week. Before we get into the spooky shit, tonight is I Wanna Believe. Tomorrow is a special episode of No Turning Back, where I will be talking about the Oscars thing because I have a lot to say about it. Then later that night is an all new episode of PZ 85 Plays, so it's a double episode tomorrow. Wednesday, here's what I'm thinking for Wednesday: if we can't put together a arguably entertaining, I wanted to say fight night for some reason. I'm thinking about doing a WrestleMania preview. We have never missed a WrestleMania preview. And that was the first show we ever did with Podzilla, was a WrestleMania preview.
I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah.
I feel like that needs to happen. I'm actually, at this point, I'm considering watching WrestleMania. We should be around for the weekend, and I got a Peacock free trial to use, so
At the CCW show over the weekend, we were all complaining that they have us booked for a show on Saturday, which is night one of WrestleMania. So we were all talking about, we're going to bring a TV and I'm bringing my Xbox in and we're just going to put WrestleMania on in the back room so everybody can watch when they're not wrestling. So that should be a lot of fun. Thursday, we will have the anniversary episode. It's a Podzilla After Dark special. It's going to be an anniversary special. It should be a lot of fun.
Historically, those have always gone well. So you should definitely tune in.
The worst show we've ever done was an anniversary show.
It was the one-year anniversary.
Yeah. It was the very first one.
Okay, the first year anniversary was good. It was the 50th
episode that was
terrible.
The worst. That's right. That's right. That's still an anniversary of some sort. All right, but let's get into the spooky shit for tonight. First off, in Spectrum News, what the fuck is this? Like, did you get this from Charter?
No, it is a local news agency from Raleigh, North Carolina.
I want to apologize for the language. I know it's been a while since we've done it, I Want to Believe, and normally keep this show relatively clean, but, you know, I'm in a mood since Will Smith smacked Chris Rock. I don't know what else to say about it. So, Tanner,
you were in a mood before.
I've been in a mood for a couple days. Tanner, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Are ghosts and spirits real? Does anyone know for sure? Well, one Raleigh woman says she's confident they exist in one form or another, and she says she's hardly the only one who believes this. Stunning news out of Raleigh, North Carolina, that someone believes in ghosts. It's as silent as the grave in City Cemetery of Raleigh on a cool October evening. Amid the dark night, headstones line the cemetery grounds in rows, marking the final resting places for those buried beneath. And old oaks and other trees with trysting branches, are scattered about the property. It's a spooky scene for most, but not for Alex Matsuo. Hold on.
Good.
Okay, we're going to do a brief ghost hunt, Matsuo said. I'm using all this equipment to detect changes in the environment. Matsuo is a paranormal investigator with horror stories of her own. She said, I had experiences when I was a kid, and then I had a really intense experience when I was 19 or 20 years old. She says those encounters, coupled with limited knowledge of her experience with spirits, led her to a life wrapped around investigations that involve interacting with the paranormal world. Speaking of the paranormal world, stay tuned for the last part of the episode where we have huge announcements to make. That's at the end. She starts every ghost hunt by recording the date and her location. Then Matsuo uses a motion detection device to track any responding spirits. She says if it emits a ringing sound, something could be nearby. Quote, I do like this equipment because it looks like a lantern for which the deceased, if assuming from the 1700s or 1800s, that's something more familiar to them. She also uses a device called a melmeter, which detects EMF and temperature. Quote from Matsuo, it's detecting changes that's happening, and if we do have a spooky experience, we can look at the meldmeter and see if something is going on. I'm waiting to get to where this is going. Matsuo says she's investigated City Cemetery of Raleigh several times and believes it's haunted. Encountered different things, especially like a shadow that's been described as like a guardian of the cemetery, she said, and it's not just cemeteries. Matsuo says there was an influx of clientele during the pandemic. That's interesting. People were home more often than they used to be, so I think they were noticing more things happening. When Matsuo goes to a client's house, she brings the same equipment with her and stays for hours. Literally hours. If it's a spirit or ghost, we assume they're people. They're not going to come out and say hello right away. We'll have the client tour the home with this where they encountered activity, she said. Tanner, what was the point of that?
Well, so normally we just like, you know, cliff note it. You read the whole thing. So basically the point of it is we're seeing an influx of paranormal activity being reported because there are more people at home now with the pandemic that's happened. More people are spending time at home. More people are paying attention to their surroundings. So they're witnessing more things happening. Which has brought on, you know, a bigger curiosity for the unknown. Wink. That was the gist of the story. It's just talking about how.
This leads me to something I do want to mention real quick, and that is one of the biggest problems that I have with paranormal investigations. She says in this story that she spends hours at the home. One of the things that's always driven me crazy about any paranormal investigation, especially the TV shows, is how they will stay there for, you know, a night, sometimes two nights. There were a couple shows, and then they deem whether or not a place is haunted based on spending a night or a couple hours in this case. I think it's ridiculous to try to prove the existence of the paranormal in the span of, like, you know, 8 hours. We spent a night down at the radio station with Kirby when Kirby Ray, you know, called us in. He was like, hey man, got some ghosts. And he wanted us to go investigate him. And we spent a couple hours there, and we caught some interesting things. But I don't think you can do a paranormal investigation without devoting some serious time to it. Tanner, why do ghost hunters not spend a week there or 2 weeks there? Why is it just for television? You do ghost hunting outside of television's realm. How long do you stay there?
For example, the radio station, that wasn't just a one-night thing. Like, I went there probably 4 or 5 times doing interviews, but also investigating certain areas while I was there. We had some interesting things happen, you know, leading up to the night of. And then the hospital here in Caro, down in Caro, man, I probably spent 3 or 4 months investigating that place. You know, weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend, and then just randomly going through weeknights. And I think it was okay to take it back to my childhood. I always used to wonder how in the world, because I'm a country boy. I'm redneck. I admit it.
Yeah.
I watch hunting and fishing shows, and I used to watch these fishing shows, thinking, how in the world are these guys going out and catching all these fish in one day? And that's the magic of TV. what looks like is one day is like a weekend. So for all we know, these investigations they're doing are spread out over a time period, but due to the magic of TV, it just looks like they only have one night.
Well, I can only take them on what they say, and they always say that we spent the night here. We spent the night here.
So I don't mark this down. I'm giving credit to Ghost Adventures. They always go to their places like a week ahead of time, and they do interviews, and they do, you know, preliminary investigations and decide where they're going to end. Lindsay's jumping in, and
That threw him off.
I just want to tell you that your dinner's ready. I just think it's silly. If it were me, if I were able to do it, you know, especially if it's a place that was legitimately haunted or claimed to be legitimately haunted, I would try to spend at least a week there, because you can't expect this stuff to happen on cue. You can't give ghosts a time limit. You know what I mean? Like, you don't walk into a haunted house and set an hourglass on a table and say, all right, bitch, you got 24 hours and I'm out this piece. Excuse me, not even 24 hours.
For the record, too, I have gathered from some of the, Tanner, what's that podcast? Is it Haunted Road?
Haunted Road.
With Amy Bruni.
Yeah, Amy Bruni.
She made mention that, and I could be wrong, don't quote me on this, but I'm almost positive she made mention a couple of times that, you know, the hunts and investigations that they did in the different places that they went, her and her crew, that part of the reason that they would only stay there, outside of just the logistics of, hey, we have day jobs, we can't just stay here forever, was that it's more taxing on whatever, like, entity or whatever energy there is there for there to be people who stay and press continuously. Like, a few people in and out here and there, that's one thing, but everybody, if you, you know, believe that everybody has their own sort of, like, aura and energy, that kind of stuff coming in waves, no big deal. That one particular one pressing regularly becomes problematic. Not in such a way that it's going to prompt more of a reaction, but that it's going to prompt less of one. You're pushing too much, and so they're going to, like, stay at bay.
It's like
I could be wrong about that.
It's like a relationship. The more attention you give them, the less they speak to you. You gotta starve them so they come crawling back. That's what the dating coach told me.
It's not always that either, but also... Also, another thing that Hunter brought up, to like in a reverse instance, whereas like to say the spirit gets overwhelmed, they just finally just stub up, shut up. Reversing it, if you have one person who keeps going into a place that's haunted, and depending on the spirit that's there, that could attach to them. Not so much attach to them, but you know, it could hone in on them and cause an issue for them, which is what happened. Ironically enough, it's what happened with me. With the hospital in Carroll. I haven't been back since the last time we were there, which was like 4 months ago. And I had a bad experience. I had to actually leave early. And it was one of those things, I was in there so much that something had singled me out and felt like it was bothering me.
Well, that's what you want, though.
Not what I was dealing with there that night. You know, something coming up and grabbing my shirt, or, you know, tugging on my pant leg, or like at the old high, at the segregated high school of this in Carroll is still standing. I had a handprint on my arm. Like, it literally looked like somebody grabbed my arm like this, and we had it on thermal, the actual finger marks and everything. I'm fine with that. You know, it didn't cause any harm, didn't cause any stress, you know.
The frustrating thing we were talking about a second ago with, you know, them coming in and maybe even spending time there, it feels like so many of these shows that do ghost hunts, it's when you say things like, you know, they go in there for a day or so and they don't have time, they this isn't their day job and stuff like that, like, I get it, but at the same time, like, what, I feel like that takes away from the legitimacy of the science. It never feels like an actual science when it comes to paranormal investigations. It feels like it's a...
On TV.
Well, I mean, who's doing the studies? Who's, if not the TV, if not people who are on television, who are doing these scientific studies? Other than amateur ghost hunters who don't have the equipment or the know-how, that go into places with a couple of pieces of equipment that they saw on TV, and they think they're going to replicate what these guys are doing. Like, where are the scientists that are actually investigating these things? Where are the people who have, you know what I mean? And I'm not this. I'm not trying to be negative.
There aren't any because they don't have the funding. I think we've talked about this before, but yeah. Nobody is funding this because nobody can. There's no definitive proof that there's anything there to fund or to. And to be fair, also nothing to make any money on. Where a lot of scientific research gets its money is if you can do something with this, we'll be billionaires.
That's shocking.
This is the kind of thing that is because it's such a risk. What we really need, I don't think we ever talked about this, but what we really need, and it's kind of referenced, I think, in a way in this next story, we need a Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Paranormal investigating needs a guy who has the time and the funding and the wherewithal to devote it to this and nothing else.
And
it hasn't happened yet.
That's what's shocking to me is that the paranormal, especially ghost hunting, it involves one major theme over and over again, and that is death. That is death and what happens when you die. There has to be a billionaire out there somewhere. As he gets older, as death creeps up on him, he starts to wonder, what happens when I die? I'm scared. And that he should be fun again.
That's the thing, though. They're trying not to. All of their energy is put into, I just don't want to die. I'm going to find ways to live on, whether regardless of what happens when I'm gone, whether it's the, I'm going to try to, freeze myself or AI or whatever.
I'd be fine with that.
Tanner's making the motion, which means I'm going to lead right into the next story because it goes right along with this.
Segway.
Elon Musk. Don't say it. Then it's not a
segue. Yeah, then it's...
Tanner, I need you to understand. No one actually needs a wild card. We don't need somebody just messing up all the plans. Anyway, Elon Musk, who very much could be the kind of guy that we were talking about, as much as I have my own issues with him and his things, has high hopes for the future with humanoid robots. He says they're happening, and the rate of advancement of AI is very rapid. Thank you for that insightful comment. These thoughts he shared during a recent conversation with Matthias Depfner, I believe, the CEO of Insider's parent company, Axel Springer, too, at Tesla's factory out in Fremont in California. Basically, Tesla's making a humanoid robot called Optimus. Of course it is, right? and Musk says that it is basically a general purpose kind of a worker droid. He says, quote, the initial role must be in work that is repetitive, boring, or dangerous. Basically, work people do not want to do. He was asked, of course, if it could feature into the daily lives of people, Optimus, that is, like lending a hand around the house. And he said, yes, of course, it would basically be a general-focused humanoid. But he does think that it is possible one day you could download your brain capacity into something like an Optimus. He said, quote, we could download the things that we believe make ourselves so unique. Of course, if you're not in that body anymore, that's definitely going to be a difference. But as far as preserving our memories and our personality, I think we could do that. And everything we have seen about AI has been that that's where it's going, right? That's currently it's just machine learning. But at a certain point in time, you're going to go, okay, can we overlap someone's personality onto that machine learning? If you can do that, what's the difference between that and a person?
I think that's absolutely terrifying. And it's terrifying from the perspective of someone who, if you have this mindset of, oh, I can upload my personality and my brain into this robot and I'll live forever. You won't live forever. You're still going to die. It's just your personality, your traits will be onto this robot. I read a story.
It's probably, no different than cloning.
It's no different than cloning.
In that sense, it's the same thing. It's not you.
It's not
a
you.
Version of you that existed in that exact moment. And everything that happens to it after the moment that it's created is a whole new person.
It's a separate entity completely. I read a story years ago about a program, AI program, that they were developing to help people with their grief, where you can upload images, you can upload text messages, you can upload videos of your deceased loved ones, and this AI would create a basically a copy of this person using their mannerisms and the things that they say, and then you could talk to this. You could message it, and it would talk back to you, and it would feel like you're really talking to the person because it's caught so many of those little mannerisms. And, it's to help with grief counseling. It's to help people that have lost a loved one and they still want to talk to them. And, I get that, but I hate that because that is not, it's not them.
I feel like that would make it worse. It would defeat the purpose.
Speaking of a ghost, there's Lindsay Wolf gone, ladies and gentlemen. that would make it worse. I would love to talk to my mother again. But if I'm talking to a chat program that just uses some of my mom's words, right? I don't want that. That's not what I want. But also, I could see how some people would.
Also, so this is, it's a moral question too, because if this AI program takes on the personality of who you were? Do they not also take on, maybe if you, like for me, example, if, you know, if they take on the anxiety that the person has, you know, does this not, this does not just become a robot that has feelings that robots shouldn't have, you know? And then on that, and on down that note, somebody who has suffered from anxiety or fear of loss, that person's consciousness is uploaded to this AI program, and then the AI program continues on after everybody that that person knew at the time of the transfer is gone, and now he, that that's alone. So, you know, what kind of pain would that bring on to that subconscious?
Immortality is not a blessing. No. Immortality is a curse.
And let's explore the darker side of it. That's dark. That's bleak. But, you know, if this technology exists, then what's to say that someone nefarious isn't going to abuse it? What if they upload
100%. It's
Vladimir
not what,
Putin?
What
is, right.
When. It's when will it happen? Because that's the other thing. And I meant to mention this at the end of that, too. But just I think we're going the same direction. A machine-based copy of a person or whatever, any machine-based thing is capable of being controlled.
Yeah.
I don't care how strong or powerful or intelligent its AI is, it's capable of being controlled by the very nature of its existence. We are not. You could put a bullet in me and kill me, and that's a control, you know, it's a way of controlling me, but you can't force me to do anything.
Right.
Machines exist entirely on the basis of code. All you have to do is go in and change that code, and it does a new thing.
And the alternate,
whether it wants to or not.
The alternate side of that, the other side of that is if they are able to break free and think independently, then you just have Skynet and you have a program or a robot or whatever that has the capability of turning against its creator, which depending on how ingrained they are, entrenched in the network, what would they be capable of? Can they shut off hospital power? Can they launch nuclear weapons? It's a scary thought, and you might think, well, that's a stretch from where we are. Like, it is a stretch from where we are, but think years down the line, this it will progress, it will evolve. People will create more and more. They won't stop at just, we can put our, you know, thought process into this robot. They will continue to improve it to the point that it may actually gain, you know, sentience. And then what happens? What happens to the human race when the robots can no longer need us? It's a scary thought, and I've preached against it over and over again. Destroy your technology. Right now, if you're listening to this on a computer, smash it. Break your phone. Don't listen to the robots. And you're going
to
die.
No one's talking to you at night.
You're going to die. Like, you have to deal with
that.
Now, whether
we've gotten much better at making that a longer time.
Right.
Like, you don't die anywhere near as soon as you used to.
But it's an inevitability.
You take care of yourself and all that.
Which I do not.
Yeah, but it's... Do any of us really?
No.
No.
Tanner, taking pills ain't taking care of yourself. Look at that beard.
I thought he was gonna say something.
I'll be here longer than all of you, so it's fine.
That's true. That's true. Yep,
not if I kill you. So
fair point.
Don't say that online. I'm not saying that there is no afterlife or immortality, obviously, because there's a very good chance that there is an afterlife. There's a very good chance that there is something beyond. There's a good chance there's reincarnation. But this is not that. At its base level, this is just, even if they did it, it would just be a replica of you. It's not you. So don't get your hopes up, is all I'm saying. And it's dangerous, because the first time someone puts Hitler's brain, or, you know, someone like Hitler, Putin, they put his thought process in a robot, then what happens? You know what I mean? It's scary. It's a frightening thought.
We're not going to live long enough to see it anyway, because the Japanese mythology says we're done, man.
Yeah, it's almost over, Tanner. What's going on over in Japan?
Well, Lindsay will find this interesting. There's a wild Ninetales running around Japan somewhere.
She's got her Pokeballs ready.
But I'm not there to catch it.
Well, somebody needs to.
I've seen the story in several places, but I've pulled it from the New York Times. With so much going wrong in the world, should we now also worry about a nine-tailed fox demoness that may be loose in the forest in Japan?
Nah.
Yeah, I'm worried.
The answer depends partially on your reading of ancient Japanese mythology.
Which I do.
This month, I must say, this is definitely up Shannon's alley.
We got a kitsune?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Let's see here. This month, the volcanic rock split in two in Nikko, in Nikko National Park, about 100 miles north of Tokyo. Intact, the rock was about 6 foot tall and 26 feet in circumference. According to a guide to the park, it had been long associated with a Japanese legend in which an evil fox spirit haunts a quote-unquote killing stone. Or...
Shoseki.
Shannon. Thank you. Making it deadly to humans. Some people have speculated that the fracture set the fox loose to cause further harm. Others have focused on a variation of the legend that ends in a happier note. In that telling, after a Zen monk splits the rock in several pieces and coaxes out the fox, she promises never to harm humans again. We can only hope. Social media has plenty of theories about what the fracturing of the stone means for ordinary mortals. So does the Japanese news media. Is this an advance warning of a disaster or a good omen? Asked a recent article in the Asahi Shimbun, influential newspaper.
Close enough.
You know what? I don't.
It's fine. It's close enough.
Heightened interest in the fractured stone may be a sign of their times, says Nick Purr, a professor of Japanese history in Rutgers University, who wrote a popular Twitter thread about it early March. There's kind of a
millenarian. Yeah.
Wow. Sense in the air, an apocalyptic feeling with the coronavirus and this war in Ukraine, he said in an interview. People are feeling like, why is all this stuff happening now? And so maybe this stone cracking open at a particular time just touches a nerve. The nine-tailed fox legend is set in the 12th century in royal court in Kyoto, Japan's imperial capital. Scholars say it first appeared in written text in the 15th century. In the basic version, the retired emperor, Toba, an actual historical figure, is enchanted by a beautiful and intelligent visitor, Tamamo no Mae. When Toba falls mortally ill, a royal astrologer discovers that the visitor is an evil fox in disguise. She flees into the wilderness, and warriors dispatched by the palace shoot her with arrows, transforming her into a poisonous rock.
We already talked about a version of this for the record, and that is, do you remember last year, the year before, we were talking about Muamua? That rock in space that everyone was like, I shouldn't be here, and it's getting too close.
That's a UFO.
And also, there's some things on it. Yeah, we don't. I just remember Asa responding, "Not now, Muamua. We don't have time for this. Is not the time.
Yeah,
this is also not the time for this.
It's pretty.
I love how when I brought this story up in the past, like a month ago, we were trying to get notes together for the very we finally come back and do I Want to Believe. And Hunter goes, somebody put it back together. Please put it back together. We can't do this right now.
Yeah, well, this is not the time. We'll deal with you next year, volcanic rock.
It is pretty crazy to think that I've talked about this to a lot of people, that if you look at the way the world has been going and all the crazy shit that's happened, I think Lindsay and I were talking about it. Like, you know, I grew up for many, many years, things have happened. I've been through a couple wars. I've been through a couple presidents. I've been through some crazy things, you know, bird flu and killer bees, shit like that. But it seems like in the past couple of years especially, so much weird, fantastical shit that never seemed like it would happen has happened. You had the coronavirus, which basically brought the world to its knees in ways we've never seen in our lives, obviously. You have the United States government admitting that UFOs are real, releasing information about them, and just flat out saying, yeah, they exist. We don't know what they are. You had a failed actor, TV host as president. Dogs and cats living together.
Mass hysteria.
So my normal instinct would be like, okay, well, this is a Japanese legend, and therefore I don't believe it. It's mythological. I mean, it's just something that it's a story. But with the way things have been going lately, sure. I mean, I also kind of believe in the 13th child, you know, the Leeds mother and the Jersey Devil. I kind of believe in all kinds of things. So why won't I?
Who's to say it's not just another cryptid with crazy, insane abilities?
I mean,
for weeboos to masturbate to.
Or, and hear me out on this, nobody has seen this thing. The rock just split. If you read the story more carefully, nobody's seen this fox thing running around. The rock broke.
The most I've seen, I actually did.
The spirit of the fox.
Well, I did see
which
video.
No one has seen.
I did see video of the rock breaking. I'll send you a video. It's Will Smith walks right up to rock and smacks it. And
I knew it was coming.
The Rock's name was Chris, by the way.
The Rock deserved it.
Chrisune.
Anywho, so we'll keep an eye out for this fox, so that way Ethan can wax tail on it, if you know what I mean.
God, no.
Bless America. He's my sweet boy. I love him. I know he's listening. So, Ethan, you tell me you wouldn't be attracted to a hot fox woman. Exactly. And as far as I know, it's a regular girl, but she has 9 tails. Is that what I gather? Like 9 fox tails?
No. Not even accurate at all.
It is a fox spirit that will disguise itself as a woman. Anyone that is interested in Japanese lore and wants a very entertaining way of consuming it, look up Lymphomy on YouTube. It is hilarious and very informative.
Oh, hell. Also, I mean, I'd fuck a ditto.
You could try out Inuyasha. That might do it.
But I can't watch it anymore because it makes me sad now.
Anime expert.
I really wish we had ended... ended this story coming out with just one of us going, oh, motherfucker, it's another Inuyasha.
Eris could never love a half demon. Hey, Tanner, what happened to Ronald Hunkler, who inspired The Exorcist?
So, well, that was a spoiler.
It's in the fucking headline!
Well, yeah, but you didn't have to say it outright. Okay, so we've talked ad nauseum about the story of The Exorcist and how it took place for the most part in St. Louis. Obviously, it started in Maryland, just like the movie, but it actually ended in St. Louis. There's been many documentaries done in the house that it happened in. The hospital that most of it took place in was also the Alexian Brothers, which has now been torn down. But the true identity of the actual boy who was possessed has remained a secret up until this past November, December, somewhere like that, when it was announced that a NASA scientist by the name of Shannon, what was that again? I don't have it up right now.
His name?
Ronald Hunkler.
Ronald Hunkler. Yeah.
Ronald Hunkler. Passed away, and it was revealed by his family that he was the child from the story of The Exorcist, which has apparently been confirmed by members of the Jesuit priests who were familiar with the story, as they were friends or colleagues of Father Bowden, who handled the case. He apparently lived with the memory of it all, but it's interesting now that after all these years, especially after all the interest that's come up of the story in the last 10 years or so, that apparently it was one of his last wishes after he passed that information be finally released. Because his family, the Jesuit priests in the area have kept it very tight-lipped who it was. Even going so far as giving him a code name. He had like 2 different code names and I can't remember them off the top of my head right now. But here we are now, however many years later, probably 50, 60 years later now.
Yeah.
And it's been revealed. And the happiness of it, the fact that a person who went through this horrifying, terrible event in their life that inspired such an iconic story that everybody's heard of, went on to become successful in life. Like, he didn't let that dictate how things went for him. He went on and made something good for himself. So what started out as a terrible, terrible, haunting story turned happy, and I'm assuming now that he's gone, I'm sure the family's got journals or something. So we're probably going to start learning more about what happened, in the house during the exorcism itself. Because like the journal of the priest who actually handled it, while very, informative with a lot of different information that we didn't know at the time, some of the stuff he kept secret because of, promises. So now we're probably going to start learning more about that event. So I'm excited about that.
Exorcisms are one of the few things that I take pretty seriously because, a lot of these things I don't believe in. I want to believe in a lot of things, but I don't believe in Ouija boards. I don't believe in, some of this stuff, but,
you can't say that before you talk about this story.
If a Ouija board was real, if it had the power specifically that people said they do, you could not buy it in toy stores.
It's not. Okay. Here's what it boils down to. Parker Brothers does not have the copyright or the trademark on Portals to Hell or Demons or Spirits.
No,
or anything
they,
like
they
that.
Don't. But it's,
what it is they have created something that can be used as an instrument to communicate.
Yeah, but the thing with it is it doesn't do that. Because it's if it did, then they wouldn't sell it in toy stores.
Okay, well, dowsing rods do the exact same thing.
Except they don't. Is all I'm saying. I'm presenting an alternative, fact that they don't do that. That there's no
proof.
Okay,
so people who've watched me with the other ghost hunting team that I've worked with in the past, they're going to know this, but this is going to be news to everybody else. I'm a dowser. I legitimately do dowsing in paranormal investigations. Shannon probably didn't even know that.
I don't even know what it means.
Have you ever heard of water divining?
Yeah, okay. It's the thing that it turns and spins around, right?
Yes.
And that has nothing to do with that has nothing to do with magnets or gravitation or there's
usually it's related with water and stuff.
My point is that there are a million reasons to explain why something does what it does. There's no exact science that says putting rods in your hand is a sign of talking to a spirit. There's no science that proves that a Ouija board can communicate with the dead. It's people's experiences, but there's no proof. That's all I'm saying.
There's no science that says that you could communicate with a spirit through an electronic recorder, or you can get pictures of them or videos of them.
I agree.
There's absolutely no science that says that. Okay, so why are you open to some of it but not all of it?
Because I think it's easier, or maybe it makes more sense in my tiny human brain that if I take a picture of something, it's there. I can see it. But with a dowsing rod or a Ouija board, there's too much human error of other people. If I take a picture of myself, I take a picture of something, and I see something in the picture. I took the picture. At the very least, I know I'm the one that did that. When it comes to Ouija boards or dowsing rods, stuff like that, you have people that are doing it, especially Ouija boards. Dowsing rods, I don't have enough experience with it. I can't talk a lot of shit on dowsing rods. I've never done it before, so I'm going to ignore that. But with Ouija boards, you have 3-4 people all touching it at the same time. They're moving the planchette around. There's no proof that anything is happening other than someone's doing it and everyone says they're not. Like, the day
it requires too many other people.
Right.
Like you said, the other stuff we're talking about, like recording or visual imprinting, that can be done with literally nobody. You set it up, walk away, and let it do its thing.
Yeah.
But this thing requires multiple people to do what is effectively a party trick.
Now, I'm not saying that it's not possible that it could happen, because anything, literally, a ghost could literally take my coffee cup right now and spill drops out to spell a word. I mean, yeah, it's possible. A Ouija board is possible that a ghost could do it, but until I see a planchette move by itself to spell things out, I won't believe it.
Therein lies the problem with that argument, because the idea of using anything for communication is that item is using your energy for the communication. So by no one touching the planchette, then in theory, it wouldn't be able to work, because it's not utilizing the energy flowing through the people using it.
So could you not?
So
real question. I'm not trying to be antagonistic. Could you not create a planchette that has energy, like an electric planchette or something that a ghost could draw energy from? Has no one done this?
Sure.
Because if they're not, I'm putting the patent on it right now. I'm announcing
it.
I'm announcing it here, legitimately. Tanner, I know we don't have a lot of time to spend on this because, unfortunately, my dinner is getting cold. But what I do want to finish off by saying is that if you are interested in the story of The Exorcist, one, there's a movie. You've probably seen it. And there's another movie.
What's it called,
Jim? I think it's called The Demon That Couldn't Be Possessed. Or It Couldn't Be Exorcised. I forget.
Captain Howdy.
There's another movie I've mentioned on this show before. It's a documentary called The Devil and Father Amorth. I forget how you pronounce it. It is the director of The Exorcist, William Friedkin. He did a documentary on a legitimate exorcist with Father Amorth, and it's just a documentary. It's based on that. It's him of the ninth exorcism of this possessed woman. And it's pretty interesting because it's whether you believe it or not, it's presented as real. So it's fascinating to watch that the guy that directed The Exorcist came back to that similar thing so many years later and did this. So I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, check that out.
Real quick before we get into the big announcement, something that it feels like only is worth mentioning on this show, or is only this is the key place to do it. You guys know I read a lot. I've kind of been meaning to mention this to Tanner anyway. I just finished a book a while back ago, and I still don't really know how I feel about it, but it's perfect for what we're talking about. It's by a guy named Paul Tremblay, and it's called A Head Full of Ghosts. The gist of the story is that these two girls, they're in they have kind of a weird home life. Their parents are kind of fighting, you know, regularly, and the older one starts showing signs of possession. A documentary crew is called in to basically come in and watch how she acts and what she does and how it progresses and everything. And then the story is framed by the younger sister telling everything about what happened and the time that this was going on. There's a lot of like, is any of this real? Is any of this really happening? What really took place? And you hear what happens on the documentary within the book versus what the girl who was there says, okay, that wasn't exactly accurate. They were recreating that. Here's what really took place. It's all fiction, for the record. But it very much follows this same kind of... it follows the same sort of plot beats. And I think you guys, I think Tanner in particular, would find it interesting. It's not bad. Paul Tremblay, it's called A Head Full of Ghosts.
Where'd you find that out? Is it on...
Bookstore.
I think we got on Amazon. Yeah, I don't know. It's on our bookshelf right now.
Okay.
It's one of the very few that I've read and Sarah hasn't, so I don't want her to catch up on it.
I hope they turn that into a movie because I can't read. All right, so big announcement time. Final, before we get out of here, Tanner, you, I don't even know. I don't even know if we can legally announce this. Our lawyers, they haven't gotten back to us yet, but we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway.
We asked if we could do it and they went, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
He called me daddy. It was real awkward. I don't know how.
Daddy. All right, Tanner. So hit us with the truth.
All right. So August 5th, 6th, and 7th, I believe is what it is. Let me pull that back up.
Well, that's right after my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, mother.
As I better not be tax-free weekend here.
Just by the way, it definitely is. As I get further into this show in the 7 years we've been doing it, I think I'm starting to sound more and more like Peter Venkman, but not the good Peter Venkman, the Bill Murray when he's past the point of giving a shit about doing a good job in the role, like the video game version. Hunter is the movie version of Peter Venkman. I'm the video game version.
Role of the psychic. Valentine's Day. Bummer.
So anyway... August 5th, 6th, and 7th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's going to be a three-day weekend for us all. It's going to be fun. Cape Girardeau is hosting the Midwest Conference on the Unknown.
What, what?
It is the inaugural show.
A.K.A. the MCU.
It is indeed tax-free weekend. That is a terrible weekend to do this.
It's a terrible lot of things. Tanner, where'd they get this idea from? Because they probably won't give you credit.
You know, I'm not. I like I said, I wasn't in it for credit, but I was listening to the show Hunter brought up earlier, Haunted Roads, and Amy Bruni talking about doing a paranormal con up around Michigan or somewhere, and her and a bunch of friends are going to. I was like, man, Cape Girardeau would be the perfect place to do this in because, for one, the paranormal is taking off in Cape, and I do mean that literally. It is getting insane. Ghost hunters, ufologists. Cryptozoologists. We have a whole cryptozoology team in Cape that is gaining national recognition right now on their Bigfoot research. Not that Shannon gives a shit about.
Do they have a podcast?
So
I'm pretty sure that's the guy pissed off.
No, that wasn't that one. This is another group.
Okay. How many Bigfoot groups are there in Cape? Christ.
Probably more than you think.
Yeah, several.
Tanner, before you go on real quick, I need to mention.
This is what you can't find. Combine your forces, man. Start working together.
My favorite part about this is that for all the credit Tanner will get for this idea, I will get equal amounts of credit for doing literally nothing. Tanner asked me if I thought it was a good idea. I said probably not. He did it anyway, and now people are still going, hey, Shannon, good job.
I am excited to turn up at this thing and be like, yes.
We did it.
Yes.
Won't be able to turn up if I want to unless I change jobs.
And Tanner will go, you didn't do anything, and we'll just swoop our capes.
Go on, Tanner.
So, I, again, like Janet said, I reached out to him, Hunter, and in the I Want to Believe chat and kind of gauged the idea of it. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to, and like Shannon said, I went ahead and messaged Ken. So the guy, Ken Murphy, the one who's in charge of all the Comic Cons and Anime Con and Horror Con and
friend of the
whatever
show,
else.
Lindsay.
And you know, I gave
listening.
The idea because. What are we?
Just
still
keep
what?
Going. Just keep going.
There we go. Keep going.
Yeah, it was, people were talking. Yeah, I reached out to Ken, because little known secret, Ken is like a closet fan of the paranormal. He's friends with other friend of the show, Michael Huntington, previous guest on I Want to Believe. And is big, you know, and Ken's got an interest in the paranormal. And he seemed to like the idea. And we talked for a few weeks and.
We're doing it.
We're doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's happening.
It's
August 80th, 5th, 6th,
I,
and 7th.
You know, great. August 5th, 6th, and 7th. I'm pretty sure we're
at
doing
the
it at Drury.
All of the events, to my knowledge, through this group is at the Drury.
Hopefully we
so,
will.
So Tanner, tell us a little bit about, yeah, who's there and what's going on. Like, well, there's a lot of guests, but also what's like happening.
Okay, so between myself, Ken, and Michael, we came up with a giant list of people we wanted to try to get guests on to be a guest for the show. Scott Walter and Janet Walter were on that list. Unfortunately, with scheduling conflicts, that wasn't able to happen. Though
but
they
he,
are
he will
the
be back. Yes,
he will be back. Yeah, so we've got a list of visitors, of people coming in to speak who are going to be, you know, our main guests for the show. We've got a list of vendors, which we'll probably talk about the vendors at another time because
we got
things like that can change.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
So the list of guest speakers we have, Micah Hanks, he is a UFOologist. You know, he's an author. He's on several books that I can see here. Ryan Sprague, he has done. He's a co-host of Mysteries Decoded on the CW network, and he's actually a regular on Ancient Aliens and Beyond the Unknown. So that's a pretty big pool. That's a pretty good one there. I've got Ken Girard. He's an American cryptozoologist. He looks like he handles. Well, he gets really into all of it besides just Bigfoot. Looks like he's got a skinwalker in one of the covers of his book. So, you know, we're probably going to see more than just Bigfoot talk when it comes to cryptozoology, which is exciting because Bigfoot interests me a little bit. Shannon, not at all.
How do you know Bigfoot's not a skinwalker?
You know, that's a question to ask one of them. You know what?
Oh, Skinfoot.
Oh, no. Well, Hunter made it awkward.
Kirby?
Hey, man.
Oh!
Put the foot in my mouth.
We've got Joshua Kutchin. He's written this is one the title of one of his stories, one of his books, Thieves in the Night, A Brief History of Supernatural Child Abductions, which that's actually something that interests me is the abductions and missing people.
Fox Mulder too.
So that may be something I talk to Ken about in the future for another guest. For if we do another show, like if this one's successful, we'll do it again, I'm sure. So that guest kind of goes along the same lines as like David Pilatus doing the missing 411 stuff. So that's interesting for me. We've got Steve Ward. Looks like he's got a podcast or something. This is one I'm not really familiar with, but he's done Wide World of the Paranormal several times from what I can see.
Hey, Tanner?
Yes.
How many more names is on that list?
Three.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's speed it up.
Rude? Courtney Block, author of Researching the Paranormal, How to Find Reliable Information. So that's you know, it's going to be a good bit of information for people learning to investigate the different things. And then we've got our local people. We've got Margie Kay. She's the vice president of the Missouri chapter of MUFON. She's also a potential guest for the show soon. She's agreed to come on to Podzilla at some point in time. Michael Huntington's on the list. Michael does more than just ufology. He does the paranormal and ghosts and in cryptozoology. He's interested in all of it. He is a valuable source of knowledge in the field. And then we've got Joel Rose, history professor from SEMO University. Joel is one of my favorite people in the world. He's a
history professor.
He's
the one that does the ghost stories.
He is the one in charge of the ghost stories. And he is also very big into paranormal research in the area. A lot of the ghost tours that have happened, like at Glen House, at Rose Theater, and all that, he's been in charge of. So he's really great to have.
What about?
And also,
speaking of the Glen House,
in the middle of all this, Saturday night, they're having a VIP party at the Glen House. So it's going to be
Glen House, a noted like paranormal hotspot in Cape, it too, is, right?
Yes, it's one of the most haunted places in the Midwest, according to a lot of articles.
Ghost Hunters were there not too long ago.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was pretty, Tamer, what about Jimmy Butler? Is he going to be there? I thought I saw his name.
No.
He was the 2011 round one 30 pick for the Chicago Bulls. He was on the roster for 2016.
I hate him.
They don't have him?
They don't have Jimmy Butler.
What the hell?
Anyway, look, we are going to talk more about this in the future. We might get in trouble for everything we've said already. So we may be banned from our own convention. We'll see what happens. In the next coming weeks, we're going to have another I Want to Believe, and we may even devote a show entirely to this, to talk about what's happening, going to be there.
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah, I'm going to work on getting some of these guest speakers to come on the show to
That would be fantastic.
For, you know, come on.
Yeah. Maybe Ken Murphy,
well,
too.
And, you know, one of the things we want to nail down is, like Tanner said, these people were all, like, guests of the con, but are they guest speakers? Are they part of a panel? I mean, I'm assuming we will, you know, be involved in some of the, like, questioning and panel hosting and that kind of stuff.
I sure hope so, because good lord, like there's no better I can't say that might insult people that are on the panel. We're really good at what we do, so we've hosted panels before for Ken Murphy. One of our favorite interviews we ever did was with Veronica Taylor and the late Road Warrior Animal that we did at the convention.
So
we will hopefully be all over this thing, but in the next couple of weeks, we'll give out some more info. We will go over like the accolades of the guests. We'll do all of these things once we have things nailed down a little bit more. Because technically, it hasn't even been announced yet. We're making the huge announcement right now, I'm pretty sure. I haven't looked at Michael's Facebook lately, but I'm assuming. So,
Ken was supposed to be here with us, but scheduling things is kind of hard to...
Ken is a busy man.
That's because Anime Con is this Saturday, and his hands are full.
Well, Saturday. We are months away at this point. Again, August 5th, 6th, and 7th, the very beginning of August, we're still talking about, you know, what, 4 or 5 months at this point?
Right.
So everything is still in the getting set stages. But as best I can tell, you can pretty well bank on, unless something drastic happens, you can bank on the things that we've said here. Those people, you know, are committed to be there, and that is the plan.
And I lied, because I said it was going to be a short show, and we've gone an hour, so. My food is
still pretty short for us.
My food isn't just cold. It's in the ice age at this point. So
no, it's been in the oven on warm, so it is still fine.
We's going to cut this off here, and we are going to call it a night. We'll be back tomorrow with a double episode of No Turning Back with Will Smith, and an all-new episode of Podzilla 1985 Plays with Will Smith. That'll be.
Oh, he turned back. He hit him, and then he turned back and went back to the scene.
Oh my God! All right, so that's tomorrow. Tanner, I haven't heaped enough praise on you for getting this all set up. I'm saving it for a future episode, but you did good. We're all very proud of you.
Yeah, I
can't wait for this.
I'll be the first one to admit I was skeptical.
Same.
If I'm skeptical of anything coming into the show, I was skeptical of this going down.
Yes.
And the fact that it's happening is very exciting.
And look at him so proudly brushing his fucking beard. Just stroking it. Look at him. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. We're going to be back tomorrow with some all new episodes. New I Want to Believe coming up soon. Until then, for myself, for Tanner, for Lindsay, who randomly jumped in here, and Double H, you guys have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow. And remember, continue, Tanner, especially. Where do you watch?
Geez.
Guys.
Cheers.
Later.